If your morning starts with snap, crackle, pop, and it's not your cereal, call Joint Relief Institute for fast-lasting joint pain relief. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000.
50 years ago, in October of 1971, there was a 16,000 copies or something of a newspaper that hit the street. I remember I must have been one of the first readers of it. I probably grabbed it at a saloon. That publication was called The Reader. And against all odds, I would have to say it is has celebrated its 50th anniversary. It is still there. It is out with the new owners and a new edition. And also a book, Free Chicago, 50 Years of the Reader, and one of the main pieces in this remarkable book, it's beautiful and it's hefty, is my friend, former colleague at the Chicago, I guess it's the Sun-Times and Tribune, Mark Japa. Mark, have you seen the book yet?
I sure have. It's beautiful.
Flabbergasted.
It's like a gorgeous coffee table book, and it reproduces all these, reader pages, and it's fantastic.
Yeah, I am. I am literally flabbergasted by it. Your piece in here was originally, it wasn't written specifically for this book, was it?
No, I on their actual half century anniversary in 2021.
Yeah.
I wrote the piece for the Reader,
mm-hmm.
and then I updated it for this book. But so I mean, it's actually now 55 years, since the Reader began, and so I wrote it for their anniversary.
How did it come to be? Who called you and said, "Hey, will you do this?" You had left the paper by then, yes?
Yeah, and the funny thing is, Rick, that I was an editor much more than a writer at
sure.
the Tribune. And,
not for the people who pay attention to your books, of which I am one and one of the most ardent believers in Mark Jacob, the writer. But you're right. No, I think most people would have thought of you then, certainly as an editor. Were you surprised to be asked, and who asked you?
It was Tracy Baim, who was the
sure.
publisher then, and I knew her slightly, and we had gotten along very well, and I think that I kind of feel like they picked me because they knew I knew Chicago history. Some of the books I've written have been about Chicago history, but I was kind of an objective person to pick because
yeah.
I didn't have anything to do with the Reader
exactly.
until I did this thing. And my one point I wanted to make is that, if there's somebody who didn't do that much reporting when I was at the Tribune, I interviewed at least 25 people for this article. I mean, it was one of the most thorough reporting jobs I've ever done in my life.
That almost anybody's ever done in their life. It must have been revelatory for you, because as much as you might have read The Reader, I don't remember you hanging out at various bars where The Reader people hung out. You weren't sort of intimate with the crowd, were you?
No, and that was again why I was able to be kind of objective about
mm-hmm.
it. I feel like, but this from year long history in Chicago newspapers that we all used to, wait for the Reader to show up on Thursday, night or evening, and because they actually had a column called Hot Type, which
yep.
was about about the news industry here in Chicago. And it was just a fascinating publication and unpredictable, really
yeah.
unpredictable.
And something you don't know about me is that when the Daily News folded in 1978, I was asked to write the Hot Type column for a couple of weeks and did.
Really?
And did. It's one of my proudest moments ever. And then I had to come back to a place where I could get a steady paycheck. But you are so right. And this, one of the things about this book, Mark Jacob, is not only does it evoke my youth, your youth, the youth of many people who are now older, it really does remind me what an astonishingly powerful publication this was. I'm sure you feel the same way.
Yeah, it really was a groundbreaker, and it wasn't the first alt weekly. You might even call the Village Voice in New York one of the first.
No, Chicago had the seed.
It was the first major alt weekly that was free.
Free,
and being free was kind of part of the magic. Everyone of that age remember is, you know, just a giant pile of newspapers outside, you know, in the vestibule of bars and other places. And it was ubiquitous. It was all over the place, and it was free. You could just grab it. And, you know, one funny thing, Rick, is that in my reporting, I found this out. It was so much in demand for people who wanted to get apartments or, you know, buy a used car or whatever you wanted, or get a date, you know, I mean, because they had a personal section, too. It was so much in demand that when they printed it, thieves used to sneak into the printing plant and steal the classified sections and go sell them on the street for a dollar a piece.
I know, when I read that in your piece, which sort of begins this fantastic the coffee table book, Free Chicago, 50 Years of the Reader, I thought to myself, when I read that, I thought, oh, man, that was a blown opportunity for the 20-year-old Rick Kogan who was driving a cab at the time. I thought, oh, my God, I wish I'd known this. It could have changed the course of my life. When you went about the reporting of this, in the last, you know, decade or more have been rough years for the paper. I nevertheless found your piece then, which I just reread, and the piece as it appears in the book, really kind of celebratory. That had to be your intention, because I think, you know, you get it. It's worth celebrating, yes?
Yeah. I mean, but it wasn't a puff piece. I mean, I feel like what I was really trying to do was tell the truth, and the truth is that it was very influential. It was so influential that, you know, at one point in time, the Music Box Theater noticed that the Reader had the wrong times on it, you know, for its movie listings, and the movie theater changed when the movie started based on what the Reader had. That's how influential it was. I mean, it's this amazing story, because it's graduates of Carleton College in Minnesota who, you know, moved to the big city. Only one of them is from the Chicago area.
Bob Ross
is from Arlington Heights, and he and his friends, you know, gravitate to the big city, and they all thought that they were just doing something for a lark for a few months. I mean, you know, one of them, like, took the, you know, postal service exam because he was sure that this wasn't going to last. And it didn't make any money for, like, the first 3 years. It really would have gone out of business if not for a couple of people who were, you know, really made the difference.
Well, you know, you give credit where credit is due here to a man named who is a very important man in this book and in the political scene of Chicago, Fred Eichner, who ran the printing operation that printed the Reader. They owed him a small fortune, didn't they?
Yeah, tens of thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
And this is, Eichner wasn't rich at that point.
No.
He later, you know, bought a UHF, a TV station, and he made a bunch of money. And he, as you well know, he was a big financier of Democratic causes, Obama, et cetera. Very influential guy, and really hard to get an interview with, Rick.
I finally got him.
One of the scores of the book and of that article was that I got Fred to sit down and, you know, to talk to me on it.
Let me ask you, not to give tips and free journalism courses to people out there who are young reporters, how did you get Fred? Because I have known over the years dozens, literally, Mark Jacob, dozens of reporters who are like, do you know how to get a hold of Fred Eichner? He won't talk to me. How did you do that?
Well, two things. I thought I was talking about a subject that was kind of near and dear to his heart.
Sure.
Truthfully, if he would have called the bill for the Reader any time in the first 3 years, it would have closed immediately.
Yeah.
And just would have. And they all say that.
Yep.
But they didn't. And so I think he's kind of proud of it. So that was one inducement. But I still didn't think I would get him. I feel like, you know, here's a trick for reporters. I think he felt, I started asking him, I made it clear to him that I wanted to know whether he ever tried to buy into the Reader. Because later in the Reader's history, yes, he did make an offer to try to buy
to
invest. And then that's a fact that nobody knew. I had heard it as a rumor. And I don't remember if I brought it up specifically or I just kind of gave him the impression that I might get into that. And you know, as you know, one reporter trick is to if you want to try to get somebody to sit down and talk to you, make them worry that you're going to say something about them without their input that they don't want you to say.
Exactly.
And that's not a trick. I mean, that's the truth in that case. I mean, I don't think that's dishonest in any way.
No, I don't either. One of the people who obviously was a huge help to you in writing this piece, and who also gets credit because he was, and deservedly so, because Mike Minor was a relatively self-effacing guy. He was a great columnist, he was a great editor. He had a piece in the initial issue of the Reader, and he eventually was hired there, and he stayed there until he died. A couple of years ago when I wrote his obituary, Mike must have been a wonderful source for you.
Yeah, he was great.
Yeah.
He was very, you know, frank about everything. You know, that's one of the things that's the most fantastic about him.
Yep.
You know, and you know, as you remember, I'll bet there were times when he wrote that, and he wrote his Hot Time column, he may have ticked you off. I know he ticked me off.
Oh,
he
sure.
Things that
of
I
course.
Didn't like him saying, you know, criticizing the newspaper or
yep.
this and that.
Yep.
But, you know, but the longer the time went on, you realized that he was really quite fair about things.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, he and I had a pretty tortured relationship, but I wound up a great, great admirer. Mark Jacob, we have to take a little break here. But I want to spend the rest of this show talking more to you about the astonishing piece that is the main text piece in a stunning book, Free Chicago, 50 Years of the Reader. I don't know how many copies they're going to print of this thing or will be available, but man, And again, this would be a lost business opportunity. I should have sold the Reader for $1 when I had the chance. And I'd love to be selling this book, too. I am on the phone with my friend Mark Jacob, and I cannot think at the moment of anybody I admire more in the business of journalism. And a lot of it has to do with what I've just been reading him in his sort of introduction and history of The Reader, a piece that he wrote for the anniversary, commissioned by Tracy Baim, who was then the editor, and updated. How much updating? I reread the piece that from The Reader of 5.5 years ago, and they're very similar. You had to do some updating because of the, oh, Mark, I guess what I'd call it, the chaotic nature of ownership in the last few years.
Yeah, it was mostly to the end, you know,
yeah.
At the end, you know, where yet again it was in danger of going away because
yeah.
they tried to convert to nonprofit status, and it was a big dispute among the two people, you know, who owned, who bought it, who were financing it, Len Goodman and L.Z. Higginbottom, and also Tracy Baim, you know, was involved in that dispute too. It got settled finally. You know, everyone's kind of saw sense, and now it's been, you know, bought again. So it has about, you know, 8 different owners in the history of
yeah,
it. But
you do a really nice job of sort of summarizing the whole thing. Because at the time I was reading about it, not every day in the papers, but enough to just be disgusted by it. Frankly, you wrote a wonderful piece too for the Sun Times opinion pages about the Reader and about saving it too.
Yeah, that was just kind of my, you know, I was out of the, you know, daily newspaper business
yeah.
by that time, so I could suddenly
sure.
have opinions.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
and frankly, I just wanted to say, hey guys, you know, let's, you know, you guys, you know, save the Reader. Let's keep on saving it. Let's not let, you know, ego get in the way. And ultimately they didn't, but it was kind of precarious.
Yeah.
We'll have to see, Rick, how it, you know, the what the future is. It's, you know, all the economic underpinnings that made it such an enormous success,
yep.
you know, have changed.
Oh,
have changed
sure.
utterly.
Sure.
I mean, remember, this is pre-internet.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, you and I have lived through, you know, with hindsight, you know, there are many changes you and I might have made with the way the Tribune is run, the way the Sun Times is run. It's easy to do that, but it makes for fearful times for anything that is a conventional print publication. The first issue of the new reader hit newsstands on the 4th of February. Have you seen it? It has a big cracked A.
I have not seen it yet. I'm just my personal opinion is I'm a little skeptical of print at this point.
Yeah.
I know. I mean, some people are not, and there's an argument to be made that some young people are going back to print.
Yeah.
And my wife, who's a librarian, likes print because it's more permanent and you can, stick it in a closet somewhere and it'll still exist. And it's no tech bro will, delete it, you know? So there are arguments for it, but I just think ease of use online is best. And when you see some of the really good kind of new startups, like Block Club Chicago and The Tribe.
Yep.
And, you see how online they are and how effective they are. I wish the reader a lot of luck and they've got a new out of town, owner and, and they've got a new editor, Sarah Conway, and we'll see what do. And before we forget to do this, I did want to say how you can buy this.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Yes.
And it's at chicagoreader.com/book. Is how you can get to where you would buy it. Now, it was a limited edition book. And by the way, the person who designed it and did all the heavy lifting on the editing is a gentleman named Christopher Haas. I'm just blown away. I got it in the mail the other day, and you know how things go. You never know how something's going to turn out in the end. And I just was stunned by how good it is.
Do you know him?
No, I don't know him at all. He reached out to me and said, hey, you wrote this article. We're doing a kind of a Kickstarter type thing to do a coffee table book. Can we use your piece and can you update it? And I said, sure. So that's the extent of it, really. And he's a good editor with my piece and he himself has
a nice piece in the back. I must tell you, ladies and gentlemen, the writing, there's not a great deal of writing, and what is in the book is frankly magnificent. It is mostly a visual feast, and a stunning visual feast. And I'll tell you too, Mark Jacob, I've talked to a number of people, former reader people, and they consider now this Christopher Haas as something of a hero, because they thought, even as they were getting the money to do this as a Kickstarter cause, many people thought, given the changes and everybody's changing and new owners and this, that there might never be this book. Right. So did you think that for a time?
Well, when I saw that they were kind of still in trouble and, I was a little worried about that.
Yeah.
And then because I finished my work, a year ago.
Sure.
And frankly, I was thinking, well, what is taking this Christopher Haas guy so long to get this
That's
done?
What I thought.
And then the book comes in and answers the question completely.
Yeah.
Because the reader was printed on pretty, cheap newsprint stock.
Sure.
You would think that it'd be tough to reproduce it in a way that was really effective in a coffee table book, but everything pops.
Oh my God.
It's so well done that you can read the starts of articles on the covers of the reader and stuff like that. And it makes you laugh. It makes you,
yep.
You remember all the stunning, investigations they did.
Rick, I'm
used to work at the Sun-Times and the Tribune.
Sure.
Proud of them both, and I know you
are
enormously proud of them. But I gotta say that one of the most high impact pieces of journalism ever done in my lifetime in Chicago was John Conroy's House of Screams.
Where he
first got at John Burge and police misconduct, police torture, in Chicago.
Nice.
And I was Metro editor at the Tribune for a few years.
Sure.
And that was one of the biggest stories we did was police misconduct.
Yep.
And we were all following in the path that John Conroy plowed.
Could not agree more. And also the way in which I was reminded in reading this, I dove into this thing and just wallowed in it for days, that the reader covered Harold Washington was so much more in depth, especially early on, than the papers were doing. I mean, I love both newspapers. I had a wonderful time, even back to the Daily News where I worked as well. And I just, it was a revelation after revelation. And also, the incredible The Essence of Being piece by Mike Linehan, a 20,000-word piece about beekeeping, which in many ways is kind of a definitive piece. I think that's what gave everybody, I used to meet, I'm sure you did too, people go, oh no, those reader stories are too long. Those reader right. stories are too long. And it's all based on that magnificent piece about Mike Linehan. And then, you know, 1978, the call girl game. What it should do, and I want to know if you think this too, there are reader archives out there in many places. Some are at the Newbery, some are at the Reader, I suppose, wherever their offices may be now. I hope this book compels people who are reading it and reading it for what it is to go search out the original stories. Do you think that can happen? Do you think, or am I?
Oh yeah, I hope so. I mean, you know, yeah, every edition is at the reader offices.
Yeah.
They were when I was doing my reporting, they were in the process of trying to scan everything. So
yeah.
I don't know how far along they are in that. You were mentioning Michael Meyer before, and you also mentioned the famous 20,000-word beekeeping story. And there's a great quote by Michael Meyer, which can I read it for a second?
Absolutely.
Yeah, he says we're publishing 20,000 words on beekeeping because Mike Linehan felt like writing 20,000 words. And we know you won't read 19,000 of them, but if you do, by God, you won't find a single typo or dangling participle, and you'll learn a hell of a lot about bees. And if you don't, no hard feelings, and good luck finding that apartment. And I thought that just wraps up the reader really nicely.
Yeah, it sure does. Your work in this thing is just a magnificent, astonishing book, Free Chicago, 50 Years of the Reader. And there's another byline in here that almost escaped me, the byline of Chris Hayes, who wrote a foreword to the book. And Chris Hayes was, I didn't know he was a contributor early on. I guess I missed that. He's also Andy Shaw's son-in-law. Did you know that?
I did know that. Yeah. And this is Chris Hayes of MS Now.
Yeah, you know, right.
Show in prime time. And
right.
And a really good show, too.
Yeah, no kidding. You know, I think you and I have got to somehow tackle and take out this guy, Christopher Haas, and find out what he's all about, because this is yeoman's work, and I cannot even imagine. He obviously looked at every single cover in the long history of the Reader and picked out, I don't know, it's a remarkable thing. What are you working for that Northwestern News Initiative, Medill News Initiative anymore, Mark, or no?
No, I was for a number of years. And the funny thing about working for that was, you know, after like 40 years in daily newspapering, I found out I didn't know anything about the business. I only knew about, like, you know, sending reporters to fires and stuff. But I when I joined the News Initiative at Northwestern, I learned a lot about the business that I'd never known when I was actually in the business. But I quit that to work on the my most recent book, which is Globetrotter, How Abe Saperstein Shifted the World of Sports.
I had a note to talk about that book. It's about Abe Saperstein. And as you know, you people who are listening to the show now can go look up the archives at this station and hear the interview I did with Mark and his brother Matthew about that book. That book's a sensation. I'm hoping, you know, the book business is a precarious business these days, but I'm hoping it's been selling. Yes?
It's doing okay. It does fine. I love doing that book because we found out a lot of stuff we didn't know. Like, you know, the Abe Saperstein, not only did he start the Harlem Globetrotters, who are from Chicago, not from Harlem.
Yep.
But Saperstein also pioneered the three-point shot in basketball. And here we are at the height of basketball season, and all these people are shooting three-pointers, and almost nobody in America knows that he's more responsible than any other person, ever for the three-point shot being part of basketball.
Yeah, he was, I mean, he was incredibly innovative and not at all that strange, which you think many people would be strange. And I thought of him in reading some piece somewhere recently about how the NBA is no longer the thrilling entertainment entity that it once was, that it's getting too, I don't know, too show busy or something. I don't know. I don't know. You and Matthew collaborating again? That must have been fun to work with your brother.
Yeah, it is. It is fun, you know. And Matt, you know, lives on the East Coast, and
yeah.
So you know, that's our excuse for, you know, talking to each other and and no, so we don't have anything else planned yet, but we'll see. I'm not done, but we'll see.
If you could talk a little about the Mary Schmeek Studs Terkel collaboration, if you would, you were involved.
Oh, that was
you were involved
great.
In that
great.
Too. Yeah,
that was great. It was called Division Street Revisited, and you can get it on any podcast platform, you know, around. And I edited Mary when we were both at the Tribune,
sure,
including the year she won her Pulitzer. So I'm really proud of that. And she, you know, and neither Mary nor I had ever done any audio journalism at all. Melissa Harris, who was another former Trib person who, you know, runs a communications company now, she had this idea for, you know, for doing this, for going into all old Studs Terkel archives, radio archives, and just his interviews for his oral history book, Division Street, America, and following up on some of the people in that. And most, you know, and their relatives and what happened to them and the deeper story. And we got together with, you know, a bunch of really great Chicago journalists, Bill Healy, Kate Cahan.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
You may have heard some of the names.
Yeah.
And so Mary and I worked on this audio journalism, you know, here, you know, after really at the near the end of our careers. We'd never done it before.
Yeah.
And it was so exciting. Now, it did help to have Bill Healy, who's already won a Pulitzer Prize,
and who is just one of the most delightful, smart people I know in this city, too.
Oh, yeah, he's great.
Yeah.
He's great. I taught him at Northwestern.
Did you really? Oh, that's great. That's
yeah,
great. Yeah,
yeah,
I love Bill. I love Bill. I love his family. His family's in the South Side, Beverly Bunch, that's for sure. I take some small credit. I didn't Bigfoot this thing, but Melissa has been very nice, saying that the reason she even read Division Street and shows how smart she is, she came to the Tribune and asked me if she's new to the Tribune. And Rick, could you recommend 10 books for me to read that would tell me about the Tribunes? I think, you know, my standard is, you know, read Boss, read Division Street, read City on the Make, and I don't remember what the other 6, 7 were. I like
Fabulous Chicago by Emmett Dedman.
Emmett Dedman, sure. He and my father were great friends. That's a good book.
That's a great read.
Yep.
Melissa always tells that story that you gave her a list of books to read, and since then she loved that book so much that she went to the Chicago History Museum and their archives, into the Studs Terkel archives there, to try to ferret out all the names, because Studs used pseudonyms.
Oh, absolutely.
For like
3, 4 different people. Sure. In some cases, he needed to. You miss newspapers at all, Mark Jacob?
I don't, because I write a weekly newsletter called Stop the Presses, which is about media and politics, and we're in this incredible political moment right now. And so before that, you know, for that weekly newsletter, I'm still following politics.
And how do people get that newsletter?
Well, if they could, my name's Mark Jacob, MarkJacob, and Stop the Presses. Just Google those two phrases and you'll find it online, and it's free to subscribe. It's a weekly newsletter that looks at media and politics, and specifically how extremism has exploited the weaknesses in American journalism.
And he said, free, in the grand tradition of the Chicago Reader, it is free.
Yeah.
Mark, thank you so much for giving me this time and the listeners this time, and thank you so much for this piece. It is just as important a thing as I've read in a long time. Take care of yourself, my friend, and we'll take this Haas guy out for a drink and find out what a great guy.
I would like to.
What a great guy he is. If I track him down.
What an achievement.
No kidding.
Thanks. Thanks for talking.
Thank you. You too.